As I was kindly introduced, I am the chairman of the Global Tivoli User Group, and I'm very honoured to have been recently elected to that. And I'm not here to give a huge pitch about what the user group does. What I'm really going to do is to give the user perspective on a couple of the presentations that have already been given. And by doing that, show the value of what the user group does, which is get across to you guys what the real user expects out of Tivoli. So now, I have to admit that this is rather a nightmare scenario from a presenter's perspective, because not only do I have the afternoon slot or the first one after lunch where you're digesting, where if you've done the drive like me, you're probably feeling a bit queasy. So, but in addition to that, sadly, a large number of my slides, which were provided by IBM, also appeared on the IDC chaps presentation. Now, hopefully they agree with what he said, but you'll see some very close similarities. And as is my wont, I will probably pick some holes in what he said and perhaps in what Laura said as well. So if we just hang on for a second. You going to be long?
No, about 2 minutes, sorry.
Okay. So what I'm going to talk about is service management in an uncertain economy. Now, we all know that the uncertain economy of this day and age is pretty much brought about by the problems that the banks are having. Now, I will have to fully admit that I work for one of those banks. So there'll be some clues as to which one later. I'm not going to tell you which one, because sadly we are probably one of the second most hated group of individuals in this country at the moment. And I am very pleased that we have now been knocked off the front pages by the ministers and those people who are putting their hands into our pockets to nick our hard-earned taxes. So let me carry on. Right. So I am not going to bore you with thousands of slides, as this suggests. Right? Had I been doing the IBM presentation that I was given, I would have fallen asleep, and you most certainly would have fallen asleep. So fortunately, you have the Andrew Cunningham slant on this presentation, which is interspersed with hopefully a few diverse slides that will wake you up. So who am I, and why am I qualified to give this presentation? Well, firstly, I have 20 years in IT. I look back on that now and think, crikey, that's an awful long time. But actually, for those of you who are my age, and I'm not going to tell you what my age is, it's not quite as long as you think, and it flies by. So I have a few years of experience. I have 10 years of experience as a Tivoli customer. For those who have 10 years of experience, you'll recognise that screen there. Hands up, all those who recognise that screen there, some of you. Yes, that's very sad. So I have 7 years as a Tivoli User Group member. So I started off as a UK User Group member. I then became the UK User Group chairman. And then this year I'm the chairman of the Worldwide User Group. I'm very pleased to be so. I have 2 years working for a Scottish bank. So I've admitted that now. Please don't stone me or anybody associated with me. Or if you do, right, that gentleman sitting up there with his hands over his eyes also works for a Scottish bank and is well worth stoning before me. And then finally, I'm actually on my third rollout of a Tivoli monitoring solution. In my previous guise, working for now Thomson Reuters, we rolled out a system back 10 years ago that currently monitors about 22,000 servers, I think. Lex, is that right, Seal? And then Lex, who now works on the replacement project that I kicked off, has got how many servers? Seven servers. No, it's about 5,000, so. And then my final one, working for the Scottish Bank, we have about 2,872 or something like that, just to be accurate. So that's why I'm qualified. Right, so I'm not going to talk through that. You all know that things have gone wrong this year and last year, and nobody knows better than those who work for in the finance industry. So any other finance industry people here that I can blame? Right, thank you. Right, so I'm going to talk now about service management and how things have changed, and it's going to have my slant on it. So, now, typically, you know, CEOs have been fairly sedentary in what they do. They don't look at IT as a cost. They look at IT as a cost, They worry about the IT costs, and you know they've been very slow in their outlook of how to change IT. That in 2008 all changed. Certainly, where I've come from, you know, they've looked at IT, and I joined, and I'm going to say it now. I joined RBS 2 years ago when they were just before they'd taken over ABN AMRO. And they had put aside a huge chunk of money for some IT change. And you know that was going to be a sea change in how they did things. We know how things have changed recently, but I'm going to come on to the fact that that isn't changing now. There's still money being spent. So your money now, rather than our money, but there's still money being spent. So the CEO has historically all looked to spend, not looked to save money. This is one of those slides which I think is very similar to the IDC slides, but I think it's worth going through. So hands up all those who potentially has more money than last year to spend. Nobody. What a surprise. Hands up all those who have less money than last year to spend. Yeah. Hands up who thinks that next year they'll have even less to spend. So, yeah. So I can tell you that we will have less to spend next year, right? And that's not because we're not investing, that's because we're investing to spend less, right? And that's a very important fact that I'm going to try and get across in this presentation. So, we went through that, we looked at that last slide, and we looked at the fact that CIOs are being forced to save money. I can tell you that our CIO is being forced to save money. Right, you'll be pleased to hear that he's being forced to save money. So, you know, pretty much every CIO out there, I think, is looking to reprioritise. He is looking to save money, maybe not this year, but certainly for future years. Right, and you know, as this slide is trying to show in a humorous sort of way, it's pretty much at the gunpoint. You know, the CEOs are holding CIOs to ransom, or the chief financial officers are holding CIOs to ransom, saying, save money where you can. So, and I can tell you that you know we have budgets that are year on year going to, at the very maximum, stay flat, if not get lower. So, now service management. Okay, so as an IT person, I looked at one of Laura's slides, and I think she said technology is driving change in the industry. And I'd like to take a little bit of issue in that because I think over the last few years, technology has driven the industry, right? However, I think now all those people who've had large IT budgets are actually having to look at the customer of their IT and reflect on what they actually want. So every single thing that I've done in an investment bank over the last 2 years has been driven by business benefit and by return on investment. Now, I think that's a complete difference to a few years ago where investment banks certainly had oodles of money and they perhaps wasted it. So so when Laura said IT is driving change, I think driving things to what the customer wants and making sure the IT is delivering to what the customer wants is actually more the case. And you know the good old days of us doing what we wanted in the IT industry, and you know a lot of people sitting around fiddling with innovation, et cetera, that's all going. It's all about now the customer is right. So you've gone from you know the old days when you basically turned around to your customer and said, "Tough, we're doing it like this because it's nice. You know, we've got the new technology." To now, you know, business benefit, ROI, all of these buzzwords, you know, they're absolutely you know. The in thing. So, right. I had to put a few of these slides in, and actually, I think this is probably very relevant. So, how many of you were in Jay's presentation that he gave just recently, just prior to this one? Nobody at all. You were. Okay. So it's very interesting. Jay did a similar sort of slide. The IDC guy did a similar sort of slide. And one of the things that I certainly picked up on, right, when Jay put it, was that if you look at those top four areas in this particular slide, right, security, compliance, IT system management, and the topic that we're supposed to be talking about here, service management, right, the top two, right? Actually, nobody wants to do, really. Right? I mean, other than the security people and the people that work in the security field, right? It does really doesn't benefit most industries to have to do compliance and to have to do security type projects, right? It doesn't move your business forward, right? However, right, risk and everything that goes associated with that, you know, in a banking world, the license to operate, these things literally have to be done. So it doesn't surprise me at all that these IBM figures here show you that security and compliance are right at the top of spend. So because you have to do them, right? If an auditor comes around and says you've got an issue here with your firewalls or externally somebody can come in, you have very little choice. It's the next two that interest me the most, especially given the area that I work in. So IT systems management and service management, I would bung together. Right? You can't really do one without the other. One is a forerunner to the other. And I hope you'll agree that sort of systems management, for me, is the bottom of the pile when it comes to service management. As I said, I've been through three large systems management projects, all feeding information into what we at RBS believe will be a large service-oriented type, and I'm not going to say architecture, but a service-oriented infrastructure is probably more the right word. So those two, for me, are key. I'm going to pick out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 down, slap bang in the middle, virtualization. Right, and I'm pleased none of you came to Jay's presentation because he mentioned this in a bit of detail. Virtualization is one of my areas in particular, and in it, it's huge, right? And if you want to do proper service management, so you're aligning things to the service, right? If you start at the bottom level with a virtualized environment, right, that gives you almost a greenfield site to start dividing your infrastructure into those bits that you can then apportion to the business. So a very good example. 2 years ago when I joined RBS, my first role was to virtualize 1,000 servers. Okay, that was the figure that the then head of infrastructure, or the now head of infrastructure, came up with, 1,000 servers to be virtualized by the end of the year. I spent the first 2-3 months. So bear in mind, I didn't start until June, so I had a lot to do in 6 months. I spent the first couple of months sorting out how we were going to charge back to the business that virtualized service. Okay, so you know, and I am very proud actually of what we did from a cost chargeback model for the virtualized service. And it's now, you know, we do a chargeback which basically says, a standard base unit of a virtual server is £40 per virtual server per month, right? And the business can buy that, or they can buy a physical, but if they buy the virtual, they get the advantage that they can up it in spec, they get charged another £5 for more memory or £15 for CPU, but they can give it back at any time, right? And that, to me, right, is the essence of providing a service that they want, right? And that's you know, the buzzword for today, that is dynamic. Okay, you can give that back, right? It's where you want it and how you want it, and the size that you want it. So, and my aim, and it's very difficult if you've got an IT department where everybody believes they know everything about anything, and especially about, you know, which chip they want or what size server they need. If we can get to a point where we're actually just saying, here's a number of in our world, we've given them a name. We call them Guinans, which is just named after one of our engineers, but it's the size of a virtual CPU to us. So they don't know, when they're buying their virtual CPU, they don't know whether it's the current Nehalem chips or a Dunnington or a Woodcrest. They just know they've got a particular size and they've paid for it. Right? And that is differentiating a service that you're providing to that IT department from them actually going, I want a DL5H5, or an X series, or whatever type of server that they want. So, I'm not going to go down all of these things for you because you can read it yourself, or if you had very good eyesight, you might probably manage to see it on a couple of other slides in one guise. So we talked about reprioritizing. The CIOs really have at the moment some tricky decisions on their hands, right? Our CIO recently gave a an exceptional presentation, actually. I was shocked. I didn't know he had it in him. But he gave a brilliant presentation to the industry only last week. And the title of his presentation was Banking in an Uncertain or Changing Economy. So very similar presentation. And he talked about the decision that RBS has to make at this point in time, and the decision that every company, I think, has to make at this point in time. And that is, do you shut up shop and wait until the credit crunch is over, or do you invest to get out of that credit crunch and be ahead at the end of it? Okay. Now, the RBS approach is to invest, right? So we are investing for the future of our bank. We're investing for the future of the taxpayers' investment in us. We're looking to come out of it ahead of the opposition. And how are we doing that? Well, we are approaching projects that are going to save the company money in the future, right? IT is very definitely a differentiator now for us, and that investment is very important. So you know, CIOs have very definitely got some bad hair days, if not in the past, certainly ahead of them, where they make these tricky decisions. So, and I'm glad, certainly at the moment, I'm glad I'm not a CIO. Perhaps in a few years' time, it would be good to be able to make those decisions when the economy's a bit better. So, another IBM slide, but an important one, and an interesting one for me, right? So, I suspect, like most of you, if you were talked to here, I would have guessed, right, that the second item here with the 35% reduce and control costs would have been at the top, right? Because most people say at the moment, what is your overriding issue, right? We've got to reduce costs, right? We've got a smaller budget, you know, got less to play with. I want to save money, right? My surmise on this slide and my slant on this slide is everybody was too scared to say that, right? Or they thought it was politically incorrect to say we want to save money. So what do they say? Well, actually, we want to make things, get better value out of things because that sounds better, right? From a straightforward perspective, right, the way you save money in any industry at the moment is to do more with less. So, you know, being perfectly blunt, less people, less cost, it's the easy thing to hit straight up. I'm glad, certainly in my area, I'm not being hit with that at the moment, right? We're just having to do more. But, you know, there are plenty of people out there who are having to do that. So my slant on that is improve quality or value. You're all too scared to say we just want to save costs, guys.
Andrew, so, aren't those two top ones almost the two sides of the same coin?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're the same thing. And I personally wouldn't have had two of those as an option in the same way. So I mean, if I'm doing a piece of work, right, I wouldn't actually necessarily be looking to do a piece of work to lay five people off. I would ordinarily be looking to do a piece of work to be able to put those five people onto something else. So, when push comes to shove and you have to lay somebody off, you know, it has to be done. But fortunately, I'm not in that boat. Other areas perhaps are. So, okay. So, common patterns of service management products and projects. Now, this is another IBM slide. However, I'm going to pick out areas that we are responsible for. So if you look at it, top one here, I'm going to, approach is all very well, I'll let you read that, but I'm going to go to the priority project because everybody's interested in what do you do first. So I've already said that one of my teams is doing event management and monitoring, and we're doing it in a big way. We have a phrase in RBS of the power of one, right? The power of one basically means do things once with one product, right, in the right way, rather than do things in multiple ways with multiple products. So we have a big initiative. We just spent a shed load of money, and I mean a lot of money with IBM. They were very pleased with us at the end of last year. We have made a commitment to migrate as many of our old monitoring solutions, and there are lots of them, to Tivoli. And it's a big event management project. We're doing that. We've done that for infrastructure. We're doing that for our application monitoring. Very happy to talk to people outside of this if you want to hear more. But it's a big initiative for us, so we've invested heavily. That actually started before the credit crunch. Just happens that we're doing one of those projects anyway. So, incident problem and service desk. Well, again, we were quite lucky. We had a very good service desk project running very well, quite a cornerstone of what we do. The things that we are looking to do with that are obviously to connect up our event management to our incident management, your auto-raising of problem tickets, etc. One of the things that I would like to see Tivoli do more is to do some of that out of the box. Right? So this is my user, so user group type hat on, but you know, one of the things that I would drive is you know, work with some of the big vendors to do some of this integration rather than expecting us to do it. But nevertheless, we've done it. Andy up there, who I pinpointed before, is leading the team, is doing all of this stuff. You know, it's going to reduce time. It's part of an automation initiative, and it's going to make a difference, certainly to our technical operations centre, to have those two connected. So, third one, I personally yawn very widely when anybody talks to me about governance, but sadly I'm in a job that mandates that we actually produce some of the governance standards, they're a must-have. If you want to do the power of one, so one product, you've got to have governance. So there are going to be you know, people who want to use different products. If you put the governance methods in, you can determine whether those are the right products to use, why would they have an exception, that sort of thing. So very important. I think that goes along with the service catalogue and service requests. We have what we call a technology menu, which is, I guess, part of the service catalogue, goes into the service catalogue bracket. Critical. If you have a technology menu, so people can go and say, this is what I should be choosing, rather than just going out onto Google and finding out what they perhaps want to hear. So, service level and availability. I'm going to skip over that one. Internally, in RBS, we're not a big SLA factory. Right? We don't govern our entire lives by SLAs, but you can bet your bottom dollar that if something doesn't meet a senior management's requirements, they come down on you heavily. So that's a sort of a given rather than an official. I doubt it will ever be an official. You know, there will never be specific SLAs that these application groups have to adhere to, but it's in a tacit agreement with everybody that if you do something wrong twice, you know, you don't, or you get to know about it. So, chargeback in accounting, for me, I said that was the first thing I did for virtualization. It's very important. Visibility. Now, I guess there's not a man or woman in the room who hasn't heard of Sofred. So if you haven't heard of Sofred, I don't know where you've been. But Sofred hated chargeback inside RBS. Right? He said, I do not need an army of people going around telling me where my money is being spent. Right? So, so now he's got an army of people telling him how he should be spending his money. But so it's not historically something we've done. It is becoming absolutely critical to everything. So if you've got transparency in what your service costs, you can go to an application group and say, do you know application X, Y, and Z costs you this much to run on a yearly basis, and you're only taking in this much, you know, surely you should be looking to turn it off or improve your revenue. So that is changing hugely. I had Tivoli knocking on my door only the other day saying, why don't you look at our chargeback software? I didn't throw them out. A couple of years ago, I'd have probably just thrown them out the door, but actually it looks quite interesting. So I shall probably be talking, I'm probably sort of cutting my own throat here, but they'll be knocking on my door. Yeah, John's up there. He'll be knocking on my door again fairly shortly. So, asset and configuration management, CMDB, all of that side. I'm not sure I need to tell anybody that if you know what you've got and you can audit what you've got, then you're on to a winner, especially when it comes to software licensing. And finally, performance and capacity management. We, again, have not historically been very good at this. And I came from a company, I came from Thomson Reuters, who ironically, when I was there, we didn't think did this very well. But actually, in hindsight, do an exceptionally good job on their capacity management side. You know, they're able to predict quite quickly when their services are going to run out. And normally these are their external services rather than their internal. So You know, if you can pinpoint when you need new IT assets to meet your service requirements, and if you can do it just in time, I mean, it's an old civil engineering type phrase, I think, you know, just in time delivery. Well, if you can do things just in time, you don't have huge quantities of servers taking up space in your data center when you don't need them. You deliver it when you need it and where you need it. So it all goes hand in hand with dynamic, or the word dynamic. So those are some of the projects and why I think you should be doing them. Why aren't people doing them? I'm not going to read all these. The slides will be there for all to see. For most people, I think, and I'll go back to where we are. Generally, it's not insufficient funding. Right? If you can business justify it, then you can do it. In our area at the moment, it's generally insufficient staff. So, and that's because they are all very busy doing other things. So, interested to know if anybody else is in the same boat. Which one of you guys, you know, feels that they haven't got enough staff at the moment? So I saw one head nodding. So, and how you can shut up, Andy. So, you got plenty. So how about who all those who feel they have insufficient funding to do what they do? So do you have that because you can't justify your project, or just because you justify it and people don't take any notice? So there just isn't the money in the company to do the work. So, yeah. I mean,
a lot more justification.
Yeah. Everything needs a lot more business justification. I mean, nowadays, almost my entire working life seems to be justifying what we are doing. So, and if we can justify, then they will spend the money. So, but it has to have long-term savings. All right. I'm going to slip on to the next one. So, who was doing my time? How long have I got?
You're taking just everyone's running about 15 minutes late.
Okay.
So you've got about 10, 15 minutes.
All right. Okay. All right. So I can waffle on for hours. So. Okay. So now, what are the recommendations that I would give then? So, improve the quality and reliability of IT services. So we said, you know, the top thing that people said they wanted to do was improve their service, get more out of their services. Okay, completely in agreement with number one. Prioritize smarter ways of doing things and technology consolidation. So, is there a company or anybody in this room who hasn't done some form of virtualization in their environment now? So, who thinks their company does virtualization in a really good and big way and as much as they could do? So have you got an almost entirely virtualized environment?
Well, we're a service provider,
right.
So we sort of have to.
Yeah.
I think what we're doing is very slick. It's interesting to hear how. I think I was going to ask you a question, actually.
Yeah.
The trick with it really is the automation of it.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting looking at. I mean, I'm from a financial background myself. It'd be interesting where we look at, you know, FTSE 100 banks, particularly to say, okay, how do they do it, and how do they get the, as you use your phrase, just in time. So. How far down the line are you with, you know, the head of desk saying,
yep.
I want these new applications tomorrow? Can you spin that up on a CPU? And
so it's an interesting one. We've still got a long way to go from the just-in-time provisioning of virtualization. Our process at the moment is really, let's have the capacity there ready for when somebody wants to virtualize. So we did an internal review of our virtualized environment recently, and the big one that came out of it was the capacity management of it, right? And which goes hand in hand with the predicting of when people want it. So
it just falls straight to a cost perspective of that. I mean, you know, as a service provider, we're watching costs as much as anything else. And do you take the risk of building out infrastructure on the basis that you will sell that as cloud-based computing or whatever you want to flavor it up as?
Yep.
Or do you? I mean, the two guys to the left and right of me have the pleasure of trying to deliver it against what I'm sort of selling. So it's interesting to hear that you're faced with a similar challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you, I mean, the next presentation is all about cloud, so it'll be interesting what comes out of that. But as a big enterprise, a multinational company, cloud computing to us isn't something that we're looking at, okay? Because we would do that internally. And I don't know whether that's peculiar to the finance industry where you're just mistrustful or whether it's just because we're a big multinational. I think we will do cloud computing with our own internal cloud, right? But I don't think we'll do it externally. Small to medium businesses, right, who can't afford to put in, you know, a full-blown ESX-based VMware virtualized or Citrix virtualized environment, you know, I think they will definitely, you know, if you look at the Amazon cloud or all of these sorts of things, they're gonna want to make the best of it. So, but you know, I shall reserve some of those questions perhaps for yours. So, okay. So number three, measurements, reporting, stress, business-driven outcome metrics, blah 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 blah, metrics. So, I think we're going to be entering. I don't think we're quite there yet, but I think the next decade is going to be the decade of data, right? Now, we've, you know, the last decade perhaps has been the decade of storage growth, etc. You could argue it's already happened, but we're still, right, we're now at the point where we're talking about using metrics to do things, right? Collect metrics for this, collect metrics for that, but I don't think we've got our collection correct yet. Right? I don't think there's any sort of standard way for collecting data. Every different software tool out there is collecting data in a different way. You know, they're all putting it into, to use the latest RBS term, their own golden source of data. Right? It all goes into a warehouse here and a warehouse there and a warehouse everywhere else. Right? By the end of this decade, I would expect, right, all of these companies, Tivoli included, to have got their act together to centralise that collection, if not externally with other vendors, certainly within their own sets of products, so that we don't have to collect multiple times. Now, Tivoli are getting there, right, slowly. It's taken an awful long time. But I want to be able to start the 2010s and onwards, whatever the phrase is, the noughties, but I don't know what the tensies or whatever it is. So from then onwards, right, I would expect us to be forgetting about collection and using that data to return business benefit, okay? And then you turn around the IT industry from being, or rather, probably the IT department from being cost to being benefit, right, and to help the business. So if we can get data collection right, whatever it might be events, it might be you know, metrics, business information, if we get that collection right, we can spend 2010 onwards doing the fancy web GUIs and everything else and the business dashboards, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just my personal opinion, but I'm sure other people may well disagree. Change focus from technology and optimise subsystems to optimise, blah, 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 etc. Right, optimization, hand in hand with consolidation. You know, it's all about more for less. So, and I'm going to skip quickly on to number five. So apply some investments to tactical quick hits, but also make progress on longer-term service quality inhibitors. So another phrase, and my boss, I think, would like to trademark this one, tactically strategic, right? Pinpoint and identify those projects that you want to do quickly now and they're going to get you your return on investment, but do them in such a way that they fit into your strategic model for the future, right? Hence the word words tactically strategic. Aim and take fire at those things that are going to be quick, but do it correctly first time, right? It's easy to say, not so easy to do, but I think it's very important, you know, that people take time, because, you know, 20 years of IT has shown me that if I did it once very fast, generally it gets left and you don't get the chance to go back and revisit it and do it properly. So get it sort of right first time with a view to it being the strategic solution and you benefit. So, and then finally, partially because I just love this slide because he looks so cute, but I think it fits nicely with the fat one at the beginning. So the next generation of CEOs will look at IT as a profit centre and not a cost centre. I think I alluded to that before, right? I suppose anybody working in an IT department would love to be seen as making profit for a company instead of just being an overhead. Right? Our front office staff sneer at the mere back office staff because we're just costing them money. But actually, we're providing them with services that allow them to make the money for the bank, or sometimes not make the money for the bank. But and I think, you know, if we get that data bit for the second generation, if we aim it and make transparency in our services and show, you know, what the business-aligned apps are costing the company and what we can do for them in IT. I think, you know, the next generation of CEOs, the technically savvy CEOs who've grown up with all this sort of technology behind them, will hopefully see us as a good thing instead of just a cost. So that is my last slide. I have no idea whether I hit time or not hit time, but I'm very, very willing to take questions. Any questions? Yeah.
We spoke a little bit about the automation things. Just to put some more meat on those bones, I mean, how quickly do you deploy into, you know, a base build virtual service for somebody?
So it's a very interesting question, that one. I've sort of kicked off a number of automation projects in my time. And each time people look at, they say, you know, building a server, right, that's what takes all the time in a company. You know, it takes hours to build servers. When I want a server, you know, this, that and the other, we can save lots of man time. Right? And I've looked at this, as I said, a number of times. And in general, building a server is actually a five-minute process and perhaps an hour or so of leaving it alone to build. So if we look at the difference between our physical and our virtual environments, building a virtual, right, it's one of the non-tangible benefits that you can put for virtualization. And it's significantly quicker. I mean, come on, if you use the technology correctly, you can snapshot a virtual server and bring another one up in, you know, a matter of minutes. In our environment, do we do that? No, there's a bit of red tape to go through. We do scripted builds for even for our virtuals at the moment, but it's still significantly quicker than physical. So, but I mean, I've seen demonstrations, working demonstrations, in fact, more than a demonstration. I know that IBM in their development environments, provision servers, so web-based GUIs. You click on it, you say, I want X server. 15 minutes later, you get an IP address and a log on. Right? And that's in use. So,
do you offer that as a service currently to your front office?
We don't. That's something that we are going to be doing over the next 6 to 9 months, probably 9 months if you look at it. You know, web-based provisioning for servers, self-provisioning portals, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it saves huge amounts of money. So, any other questions? I can't believe I was that good. So, right, cool. Good time.
Thank you.
No problem. All yours. That's,